Welcome to Go For Side Effects. I'm your host, Kevin Simon. Today is a special podcast. I didn't let any of y'all know about this because I want this to be kind of like a surprise, but y'all know my co-host, John.
Hey, everyone.
And today we got Brian Talley. The reason I'm bringing Brian on today is this is an important thing. Brian wrote a bill. It's called the Talley Bill. And I'm going to let him talk about when he was in the service, and I want him to introduce himself. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kevin. Yeah, so, a little background. I'm a former sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. I, like every Marine does, you go through and you serve, and then you get out of the Marine Corps. You transition from the military to civilian life. And then you continue to contribute to society. You build a family, you raise a family, you ultimately are living the American dream. And then one day, life kind of threw me a curveball and put me on my knees in ways that would forever change my life, unfortunately.
And that's exactly what I want everybody to understand today is what veterans, and this is out of Houston, correct? The Houston VA?
No. So what happened, guys? I'm living the American dream. At the time this all happened to me was January of 2016. And in January 2016, my life fell apart. My life crumbled. My life absolutely put me on my knees and kept me there for years and years. In January 2016, I couldn't get out of bed one day. I was in severe pain, and not just pain, but night sweats that would soak up my entire bed. And I would find myself on my bathroom floor just trying to find any relief from the cold tiles. And, as my dog was laying by me, my black lab, trying to figure out what in the hell is going on with you. And so that morning, my neighbor and my wife and another friend had to carry me out to the car, and my wife took me to the VA emergency room. I grew up in Southern California, and that's where we lived, in Temecula.
Okay.
So we went to the VA Loma Linda in Riverside, and when we checked in, we were in need of emergency medical care. And what we got was an x-ray, and they stated to me that I had sprained my back. But nobody knew how I sprained my back. I didn't have any trauma. I didn't go to bed on a Tuesday with any pain. I was fine. And then on a Wednesday, I can't walk and I'm in severe pain. So they gave me a shot of Dilaudid, a shot of Kenalog, and a shot of methocarbamol. And if anybody knows anything about Dilaudid, that is a very high-end opioid that is used for, if you're on the battlefield and you get shot, they'll give you Dilaudid. Dilaudid is a very hardcore drug that will take away your pain. However, it'll take away everything. It'll put you into a state of incapacitation.
Yep.
So we're at the VA. My wife is pleading with them, there's something wrong with my husband. Can you give him a blood test? He needs MRI diagnostic testing, whatever. And they said, nope, he's good. So I left with those three injections. I left with a bag of pills. And we found ourselves right back there the next day. This time I had a panic attack on the ER floor. I was in a wheelchair. Again, I couldn't walk. My wife was being consoled by other veterans in the ER. Once I fell out of that wheelchair and had a panic attack on that ER floor, they came out. Now, this time I had a double shot of Dilaudid. I had one in the left cheek, one in the right cheek, and then a shot of methocarbamol. And then they gave me a bunch of anxiety meds, too, which is a no-no. You can't mix Dilaudid and anxiety pills. You can go into cardiac arrest. And then the next thing you know, you're, trying to, come back from some serious drug overdose. But despite that, they weren't treating the root cause of the problem. they were treating the pain and not the reason why. They said I needed to leave the VA ER and that I was fine again. And you can't make this stuff up.
That's twice? Twice they told you. Jim,
yeah, twice. So each time I went, it was just Dilaudid, methocarbamol, Kenalog, and bags of pills. And that's
no explanation as to why?
No, they just said you sprained your back. Go home and stretch.
Oh, my God.
You'll be fine in a couple of weeks. So we would end up trying to get another doctor's appointment. That took 2 weeks. Finally, saw my primary care physician, and she said, oh, yeah, you know, I agree with those other people. And now I'm on a walker, and I'm down 40 pounds. Still no diagnostics. I still can't even communicate because I'm on about 40 pills a day at that point between the gabapentin and all the nerve and pain medicine and all the, it was just, it was a mess. I mean, talk about not being, able to take care of my own, affairs. I was a walking dead man. As far as anybody knew, I hadn't worked. I hadn't done anything. And before you know it, 4 months goes by. And we finally got opened up by a private surgeon down in San Diego at Scripps Hospital, because the VA was just full of delayed and denied care. And I happened to fall through the cracks. You know, a lot of veterans fall through the cracks at VA hospitals, and I just happened to be one of those guys. Why me? I don't know. I guess my number was pulled. But they would find a surprise. As I lay open on the operating table, the surgeon would call in infectious disease, and they describe my spine as being moth-eaten and oozing with inflammation. And they had to begin to remove bone and spinal disc, and started to disconnect things like my bladder and my sexual organ and stuff like that, and have kidney issues and so many things affected with your spine. That I tested positive for a bone eating staph infection that was aggressively eating me alive for 4 months. And to be eaten alive from the inside out is the most painful thing that anybody could ever go through. I don't know how else to explain it. I don't have the words really. I sat in a chair and I didn't move for 4 months. And, as this was all happening to me, and my wife did everything she could. She advocated for me hard. We would end up going out to a private facility, and she got an MRI that showed I needed to have surgery, but they didn't know it was this bone eating staph infection that could have easily been detected with the blood test. So these types of infections don't happen in the United States, because they are so painful. And because they're so painful, you would be hospitalized immediately. And I wasn't. I was just given Dilaudid and Kenalog and methocarbamol and bags of pills. And we thought we were doing everything right. I mean, of course, I'm in an incapacitated state. And when I mean that, like, I couldn't even talk. You're so out of it, and you're so looped out. And my lifeline was my wife handing me, handfuls of pills every 4 to 6 hours. That was my regimen. And, when you're losing, 40 pounds in a month, and you're peeing in a bucket because you can't walk to the bathroom, and it takes 45 minutes for you to drip into a bucket because your bladder isn't even working because it's suffering from bladder paralysis and all this other stuff that we had going on that I had no idea about, it makes for a horrifying experience.
Oh my gosh. And that's the one thing that I try to bring up. It's amazing how different VA facilities are different than other ones. Because when I go to my primary care, all I got to do is say, hey, I'm not feeling good. She goes, we're going to do a blood test. And that's when she realized, whoa, something's wrong with your B12. So let's start doing this and this and this. But I hear horror stories that come out of up north in Louisiana, Shreveport. how terrible theirs is. I mean, I had a Marine on there that had cancer. His wife had to take care of him in the hospital. Changed mm-hmm. it. I mean, thank goodness that your wife has been your advocate. Thank God for that.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and I'm very lucky.
And so,
Brian, when with all this stuff going on, and I understand, you know, like, you know, clearly we know that what the story, but this is the first time we've met. But as far as your spine, and did I know there's a lot more to this story, but I mean, as far as down to do you know what caused, do we have an explanation of what caused the problems that you're having? Do they know?
I've spoken to several infectious disease doctors and nobody can give me a solid answer. However, the one infectious disease doctor that was on my case the whole time from start to finish, from the installation of my PICC line that was installed for 4 months, he says that it was something I probably picked up when I was in Korea or Thailand or Japan or in one of those, far east, countries. And I digested something that attached to my spine and was dormant. And the infectious disease doctor stated that this can happen and it can be dormant forever and never wake up. However, in my case, one day it woke up, and when it woke up with a vengeance, and it woke up in a very aggressive way that would immediately, put me in a state of needing emergency medical attention. And unfortunately, in my most critical time in need in my entire life, I never got that care. That I should have received. That's just the way it works. we did everything the right way, and the sad thing about this is that prior to this, I was a successful custom landscaper. I was an entrepreneur. I have 4 beautiful kids. I've been married almost 25 years. I enlisted in the Marine Corps at 17. I've got a kid already through college. I have another one in college. I have 2, coming up through high school. I've been a contributor to society in a positive and honorable way. I've paid my taxes. I've done everything the right way. And then to have my family go through such hardship and the trials and the tribulations, to put a good family literally down.
Right.
It hurt, and it still does today. It's very traumatic, what we all went through, and we went through it for years together. I mean, it's been 6.5 years, since that January morning, and there's not a day that goes by I don't ever think about it.
So for our listeners, Brian, I know that we talked before we got on camera, so to speak. I know you served in the Marine Corps, and I had asked you this already, but I'd ask you to repeat it for our listeners so they have a little bit of background of what you did while you were in the military, because all of our jobs are different. They're all equally as important. One isn't more important than a job or than any other person's job, because it all meshes together. But that being said, what, if you don't mind sharing with us a little bit about what you did in the Marines?
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of I was a red patcher. I was the Marines that always said that they had AIDS. So, you got a 1x3 on your right and left below your cargo pockets. And then you have a 1x1 on your cover. So I was a red patcher. We used to unload, offload ships. I was with the Beach and Terminal Operations Company. We would do HSTs. We would secure LZs. We did a lot of stuff on the ground. That's, basically it. I fired big guns and was on ship and on rail and on big planes. And I mean, I did it all, planes, trains, automobiles, the Marine Corps, and got to visit, I think I've been to about 7 or 8 different countries. I didn't do any combat. when I was in the Marine Corps, but I did have my fair share of humanitarian type stuff when we were in. And I also did some work in Cuba during I think it was the Clinton, when they had some problems down there in Cuba. And so I was on some of those missions down there, working in with units and with the Coast Guard. And, and then I was, I did see some traumatic stuff too in the Marine Corps. You know, I was on Operation Purple Star in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, when they had two helicopters collide. And, every single one of those Marines perished, search, rescue, cleanup. It was a good experience. I grew up quick. Like I said, I joined the Marine Corps at 17. I needed structure. And the Marine Corps was that place where I found it. And then from there, like I said, I got out and then I began to immediately be the best civilian that I could be and put a lot of pressure on myself to not fail and to live an honorable life. My daughter was born in Camp Pendleton before I got out of the Marine Corps in 99. And then I would go on to have three more kids. So,
man, I can't believe you had three more kids. I have three kids. I was like, I know. After that, I should have learned after the first one. I'm just kidding, children. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
You are going to get some backlash off of that.
Hey, I had to throw a joke in there. But I do, Brian, I want to get into something that you said earlier. And it almost sounds like he was trying to tell you you could have picked up a parasite. That's what it almost sounds like. That attaches to your body. Yeah. And when that parasite wants to open up and do its thing, it does it. Now, how long did it take the VA to say, hey, you know what? Look, we messed up. We want to try to make this right. And let's get into that part. Because I know that's important.
So that's what happens. After the 4 months, I have the surgery. I get the PICC line. I go back home. The surgeon says, hey man, I don't know how you're going to, heal up from this. Cause I've never seen this before. So let's just take it as we go. And the pain never went away. The infection was cured up. It took 4 months to get rid of the infection. 1 month per month, I had the infection and it was a very aggressive IV antibiotics. And I would end up just remaining in my chair. And by this time, the anxiety, the depression, my livelihood, I could feel it all just sucking the life out of me. After a myelogram, about 6 months down the road after my surgery, stated that I had permanent spinal injuries from my neck all the way down to my lower L spine and really my whole body is all affected because of the neuro and the cognitive. And your spine is your life. When you have back surgeries and spinal surgeries and they start disconnecting stuff and they start cutting on stuff and taking bone out and moving that spinal cord around and then it gets pinched and compressed and all this stuff. And then you have an infection eating away at it, eating away at your bladder and a kidney and, all the little wires and all the little branches that are connected that make your body work, are being eaten. It's hard to come back from something like that. It's hard to get that stuff to be rejuvenated because it really just doesn't happen. So I never ended up getting, better. I got better, emotionally and mentally finally after about 4.5 to 5 years after the process. So I'm still really new at being happy again. But after the myelogram, we filed a federal tort claim. Okay. That's pretty much, you are suing the VA for medical malpractice and medical negligence. At the 6 month mark, the VA Office of General Counsel from Vermont Street in Washington, D.C., called me and they stated to me that they were apologetic. and that they concluded that the VA failed to meet the standard of care, and there was a breach in liability, and they're going to be settling my claim. And to not worry, you're not going to lose everything that you've ever worked so hard for. And at this time now, I mean, we're a year down, I've already lost my business. My wife's doing everything that she could do to stave off financial ruin. She started to get credit cards, and because I got four kids, didn't have any money coming in. And I was hurt due to no fault of my own. I was hurt due to medical malpractice. I was hurt because of errors that were committed by clinicians inside a VA hospital, not once, not twice, but three times over a 4-month period. And wow. So again, they were apologetic, and they were going to be settling my claim. And at the 1-year mark, they drop a letter, and the letter stated that they found out that out of all the clinicians that failed to meet the standard of care, they cherry picked one clinician in there. So I think it was like something like 11 or 12 failed to meet the standard of care. Okay, that were all involved, that everybody that had a part in touching me. One of those was an independent contractor. And see, what a lot of veterans don't understand is that you have a lot of independent contractors that are working inside VA hospitals. And I'm not talking about out in town civilian hospitals. I'm talking about inside the VA hospital, inside DeBakey, inside the walls of DeBakey or the VA Loma Linda, any VA, the big hospitals, and they have VA IDs and VA doctor's coats and VA badges and VA business cards, and they have VA laptop access. They see VA patients. Those are independent contractors. The majority of them are, because this is how the VA can see their way out of any medical malpractice cases when they do screw up. So what happened in my case is they said, we are going to settle your claim. Then they dropped that letter in the mail 6 months later, knowing that they were going to be holding off and watching that clock. Once that clock struck 12, they dropped that letter and stated to me that they denied it on a technicality, and that they have denied it due to an employment status of the said clinician that they are holding accountable as an independent contractor. So you need to sue her in state court. They dropped the letter to me 3 days after my California state statute of limitations had expired, therefore leaving me with zero recourse, zero accountability, zero justice, and essentially having my right to due process not only stripped away from me in federal court, but also now in state court. Did an about face and left me and my family holding the back. Literally, their dad should have died within 10 days because of this infection. It should have went septic. And they should have lost me due to medical malpractice. And there's a lot of me that don't make it through these types of cases. Wow. A lot of people don't understand that medical malpractice is like the number two cause of death in this country. I mean, look, we're all human, and humans make mistakes. And that's just the way it is, okay? But medical malpractice happens a lot, you know, let's face it. But I don't think it happens on purpose. I think doctors get busy. I think they get overworked. I think they get overwhelmed. There's not enough of them. And everybody goes to the hospital for everything now, even if it's a cough or a cold. And a lot of people end up falling through the cracks. But my only thing is that when it happens, there needs to be some sort of accountability and some sort of transparency. So that poor guy or that poor girl literally doesn't lose everything that they've ever worked so hard for due to no fault of their own. And that's where it hurts the most.
Now
we did everything right.
Now I want to say this though. The one thing also is in the very beginning of this, you also said that your wife asked them to take that blood test. A simple blood test would have told them this. And they
denied
failed.
It.
That's right.
Yeah. I've got all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, my federal tort claim was thick.
And that's BS.
They never said that they didn't screw up. I mean, that's public. Just Google me. Brian Talley, VA medical malpractice. Brian Talley, U.S. Marine veteran. It's the VA claimed responsibility here. They're not saying that they didn't screw up. But what they did is they held on to crucial information. They held on to crucial information and they were not transparent with who hurt me. So any veteran that is injured inside a VA hospital can sue the federal government. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's called a federal tort claim. Like I said, it's an SF-95. Right. I never knew anything about this stuff. I never sued anybody in my life. But now that I was nearly losing my life, we had to do something to recoup our losses, the pain, the suffering, the loss of my truck, the loss of my family vehicle, the loss of a rental home, the loss of my tools and equipment.
And the time with your family. That's the biggest one, I think.
I'm not going to lie. I've lost years and years and years off my life from sitting in a chair, living in a anxiety riddled and depressed body for years and years and years and years. And I still struggle today. I still struggle. Like I'm sitting here right now and my neck is bone on bone right now. I just had another surgery. And this is all still collateral damage from January of 2016 that I still need to have neck surgeries and back surgeries and that my bladder's gone. You got to cap yourself. You can't, you know, do things anymore with the, you know, you can't reproduce. There's so many things. And I was 38 years old when I got hurt. I'm 45 now.
Yeah.
I'm 45. Wow. And when I got hurt, I wasn't gray. and now I've got a touch of gray. But you know, it's just one of those things that I had never faced adversity like this before in my entire life. And it makes me sweat when I talk about this because it's just, it's sad on so many good people in this country that we lose every day to veteran suicide. It's not all due to the wounds of war. A lot of the times it is, but a lot of the times it's not. You got veterans that are getting, you know, turned away when they know they need help. They go there and they try to get help and they get turned away. Oh, we can't see you now. You got to come back in January. I'm 120 days post-op in Houston. They did a great job on my next year. I had a great doctor here in Houston because I live here now because, like I said, we had to move from Southern California because we couldn't afford it there anymore. And we came here where it's a lot more affordable, where we could essentially start over. The only thing I didn't lose was my home. So that was good because we were able to make money off of that. But come to Houston and, you know, it's kind of like going to Taco Bell in the 80s. You know what I mean? A dollar would get you a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like, what we got.
What did bring you to Houston, Texas? So you're next door neighbors to... Yeah. The barber here. What brought you to Houston, Texas?
So my best friend that got me through my hardest times in my entire life is from Houston. Okay. And we served together in the Marine Corps. And he said, come to Houston. I said, man, I've never been to Houston. I've been across 40 in the, you know, I've been through Northern Texas and stuff like that. And I've been in East Texas and Henderson when I was a kid. But other than that, I had never been to Houston. He says, man, come on, just, you got me here. And, you know, and we just, you know, start all together, you know, start over together and you'll have me to lean on. And I've been leaning on him, you know, for years.
Up so a solid point. Reason to move when you got a brother right there.
Yeah. You know? So I took a leap of faith. I mean, we moved here blind. We rented for a year. And then once we were able to clean up a lot of our credit, you know, due to all of the, you know, the credit cards and stuff like that we had to get under control. And like, before my injury, we never even had credit cards.
Right.
You know, so we had to, you know, pay off all that stuff and get our credit cleaned up. And I mean, essentially really start over, you know? So I'm really proud of my family. You know, I got four beautiful kids and an awesome wife in nearly 25 years. And, you know, my family stuck through this battle and this fight through some turbulent times, you know, a lot of families, you know, get broken during this time. But my family was, you know, isn't always has been cohesive. And so that kept the family, you know, together, and we went through it. Their leader went down. And I think one of the things that makes me very, you know, very proud is that I've always provided for my family. And I work so hard for them always. And I given them everything. And then when their leader went down, they began to provide for me. and you can provide in other ways in monetary value. And they provided with counsel, they provided with love, they provided with so many things to help get me through some of the toughest times in my life. And now I'm providing back for them again now, just being that good father figure, being that positive role model, showing them that you never quit, despite all the bad stuff that happens, despite you living in constant pain. The pain never goes away. And you know, their dad is resilient and their dad has persevered to live the best quality of life that he possibly can, and to do it with us and to do it with the family. And, you know, because I knew my kids were watching me, and it took me a long time to get up out of that chair. It took me a long time to get up out of that chair. But one day I said, I'm ready. Only me can save me. Yep. Only you can save you. And I knew I was ready. I needed to get back to being who I was. I knew that the Brian Talley prior to January of 2016 was a lean, mean fighting machine. I was a coach in football and baseball and gung-ho. And I was running companies and dipping Copenhagen and drinking beer. And I mean, I was just one of those life of the party, you know, good old boys. And then all of a sudden, boom, life puts you on your knees and humbles you. And here I am later, 6.5 years, you know, just still.
But really, you're kicking ass. That's one thing about it.
Yeah, I'm doing the best I can. You know, I put a lot of pressure on myself, man. I put a lot of pressure on myself.
Well, let's get into the Talley bill. How did you go about? Yeah. I want to know how did you get into the bill? I want to know who signed it. I want to know the process.
Well, it's crazy. After that letter came and they denied everything based on an employment status in that technicality, I completely felt railroaded. And I felt that the federal government had committed a crime against me and my family. You know, I felt as if they committed some sort of fraud. And so I contacted a bunch of attorneys and nobody would take my case because of all those statute of limitations. So the VA knew what they were doing and essentially it's a legal loophole. So I pick up a law book and I look up the law that stated that they were free and clear of this. And the law was essentially bulletproof. It was written in 1946. It states that if a veteran is injured in a VA hospital, And the clinician is not a U.S. government employee, the VA is not responsible for anything. So that's how they have so many independent contractors working in the VA hospital. No one knows who they are because they do this in a strategic manner to see their way out of lawsuits, to see their way out of medical malpractice claims. And when it's committed by an independent contractor, the VA doesn't need to report those numbers at the end of the fiscal year. So if they have 100 independent contractors and 3 employees, and the 3 employees commit 5 malpractice claims, and the 100 commit 500, well, there's only the 3 that are getting reported. Wow. And the other 100 aren't. Okay, so I exposed this, and I went to my congressman, Duncan Hunter in San Diego. And I said, Congressman, we have a serious problem here, man. And I was... And I didn't say it like that. I was like, Congressman, I could barely talk. I mean, I was probably taking 30, 40 pills a day still. I did that for years because the pain was so much. And then the anxiety, the depression, the having the livelihood sucked out of you. And then you're so fearful, your heart's pounding all the time. You're like, are we going to lose everything? Are we going to be homeless? How did we get here? How can one day you could be living the American dream and the next day you are literally on your knees praying to God saying, Lord, what did I do? Because my family and we don't deserve this.
Right.
My congressman agreed. He said, yeah, we do got a problem here. He started writing letters and it wasn't but just a very few short time, you know, if it was a month or if it was 3 weeks, I don't know exactly. It's in the book. He got indicted on federal charges. He screwed up in Congress and Congress lost all confidence in him. And he was forced out of Congress and he had just gotten reelected. And so I had now the only, I was living in the only congressional district in the United States of America that did not have a sitting member of Congress. So not only was I completely ruined because of this infection and the medical malpractice and the gross negligence and now legal malpractice thrown at me and criminal and fraudulent actions against me, then I go to my congressman and he's indicted on federal charges. Literally everywhere I went, it was an absolute train wreck. So now I go back to my chair and the depression gets worse. I'm in a whirlwind of nightmares. Literally, just trying to figure out how I'm going to survive this. And, you know, I one night I was just sitting in my chair like I always did. I sat in my chair for years. I have pictures of it. The chair was ruined, but it was my safe place. I didn't come out of my room. I was like, man, I've got to do something about this because I'm not going to be able to live with myself knowing that this loophole is out there and it's hurt so many hundreds of thousands of veterans over the last 74 years. Generational loophole, again, that has destroyed the lives of veterans and their families for far too long. So I got up, I went to my bathtub, I took my pills and I prayed over that bathtub. I filled that sucker up with tears. I put it all into God's hands. I said, guide me, encourage me, and educate me. And I want to take on the federal government. I want to take on the Department of Veterans Affairs, but I want to do it in an honorable way. I want to do it in a way that's going to make sense for everybody involved. I want to do it to actually make a change. I don't want to go and slander and name call and all that stuff. But I got to pull all that aside. I can't show my anger. I can't show my frustration. I'm there to change a law.
Thank you for listening to Go For Side Effects. If you have any stories you would like to share or just have any comments or questions, please email me at kevinsimon@goforsideeffects.com. Just to let all of our listeners know, we have opened an online store. All proceeds will go to helping veterans connect. The link will be in the description below.